Committee on Business and Economic Development to order.
Hello.
Welcome. We are going to begin by doing a couple of work sessions before we go to our public hearing. So I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 17. Teresa, why don't you tell us what we have before us on the dash one?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senate Bill 17 creates the Task Force on Telecommunications Law Revision. In front of you are some dash one amendments which were discussed at the first public hearing on January 27th. They are provided on behalf of the bill sponsor, Senator Nelson, and the PUC. The amendments revise the makeup of the task force. It expands the number of members from 8 to 10 members. The governor appoints 6 members. The president of the Senate appoints two Senate members. Speaker of the House appoints 2 House members. The other major provision of the amendments changes the task force's administration from the legislature to the Public Utility Commission.
Okay. Are there any questions by any of the members on the dash one amendments? Okay. With that, I would entertain a motion to adopt the dash one amendments to the task force.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash one amendments.
Senator Atkinson has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 17. Okay. Any discussion?
Yes.
Any objection? So ordered.
No.
So we have a referral, subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this piece of legislation. So I'd entertain a motion to move the bill to do pass to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would be delighted to pass the buck and send this down to the Ways and Means.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 17 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Order. Okay. We're going to move now to open a work session on Senate Bill 462. Teresa.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 462 modifies insurance financial regulations for health care service contractors.
Okay, this was the bill, members, we heard earlier, and it was pretty specific to some concerns that ODS had before, and those were resolved. But we had set the bill only for public hearing at that time, so... since there apparently was no other issues on that, we brought it back for work session. Is there any discussion by the members on Senate Bill 462? If not, then I would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 462.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 462 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 462 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Anybody would like to carry that piece of legislation? Senator Atkinson, and we're expecting a historical perspective on that as well. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 328, and Don, are you, who's going to be give us the, oh, Senator Morris, are you going to be our first presenter on this bill? Well, please do, come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Colleagues, I do appreciate the opportunity to lead this one off. Senator Westland was planning on joining me. He's one of the chief sponsors of this bill as well, but I see he must have been delayed. To put it in the simplest terms, this bill is a jobs bill for Oregon employees and Oregon employers. I do have a constituent from my district, Forrest Barnes, who manages Palm Harbor's homes operation in Albany, a very large operation. And the bill is really quite straightforward. It allows Oregon manufacturers of modular homes to meet the requirements of the state to which they would be shipping the product instead of Oregon's requirements. The product would not stay in Oregon, but allows our employers to be competitive with those that are manufacturing outside the state to meet those standards. It's pretty straightforward. There's quite a bit of, I believe, testimony today that you'll hear directly from manufacturers and from those that are really more familiar with this than I am. Okay. My interest in this is providing employment in my community, as I know all of you are as well. So with that, Mr. Chairman, colleagues, I'll stay brief and move on to another committee if it's...
Okay. Thank you, Senator Morris.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's Let's begin. Let's see. Don Miner, why don't you come up, and if any of the others proponents are with you and you would like to bring up at that time, you do so. You'll probably have decided how you want to make the presentation. So.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner, here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association to speak in support of Senate Bill 328. Senator Morris said it probably as succinctly as it could be said. This is a jobs bill. This bill will allow Oregon manufactured home producers to create new jobs where none exist today. It, as he said, it allows these manufacturers of manufactured homes to build modular homes in Oregon to the building code requirements of the state where the home will actually be placed. It specifically exempts these manufacturers from being required to build to the Oregon building code, participate in the Oregon inspection process, or use licensed people, unless the home will land in Oregon. If the home is going to land in Oregon, the home would still have to be built to the Oregon standards. Now, before I get going, just a couple of definitions. A manufactured home is a dwelling built in a factory to federal building standards. Those standards are preempted and uniform throughout the United States. A modular home, as we refer to it, modular, is more precisely defined in Oregon law as a prefabricated structure. For brevity, we'll call it modular home. But a modular home, then, is a dwelling built in a factory to a state building code. If it's built in Oregon, a modular home would meet the Oregon code. If it's built in California, a modular home would meet the California code. Not a tremendous amount of difference between the codes, other than, but the differences make all the difference.
Well, Mr. Meyer, if I could just stop you for a moment here, would you try to focus a bit more on that difference? The way you articulated that, it didn't sound like that much different to me. Mm-hmm. In terms of maybe an example of a manufactured home versus the modular home that you're talking about.
The difference between a manufactured home is one is regulated by the federal government and one by the state. There may be no other difference between the two other than evidence of the federal regulation will be a red label at the back. Evidence of satisfying state regulations will be a gold label at the back end of the home. Both modular and manufactured homes, by and large, and site-built homes, for that matter, are built above minimum code requirements. A little further in my testimony, I'll talk the difference that, well, I'll just cut to the chase now then. The real difference is who does the work and the inspection process. Manufactured homes can be built without the benefit of journeyman plumbers and journeyman electricians. Remembering, this is an assembly line process. A manufactured home isn't required to undergo what is called a cover inspection process. So that's a process in Oregon designed really for site-built homes where a portion of the construction is completed before that work can be covered over. You call for an inspection, inspector arrives. In a manufactured home, the inspection really is done by the manufacturer and, in the case of Oregon, state of Oregon employees under the supervision of the federal government monitor the factory continuously. But the federal standards allow the home to be just continuous construction. You don't have to wait for an inspector to come. California is sort of a hybrid in between that. Your first 10 homes, you do a cover inspection process, as I understand it, and thereafter it looks more like the federal standards where you just build. So that's really the essence in terms of definitions and then the problem we're attempting to overcome.
Thank you.
I'll just say that you can imagine stopping an assembly line of a few hundred workers or 300 workers for even 10 minutes waiting for an inspector, let alone hour or longer. Now, the state of Oregon is pretty good about scheduling those, but still they're scheduled inspections. No one in Oregon today is building modular residential buildings. We don't think anyone's done it successfully in the state since the 1970s with Boise Cascade. I think they had operations down in Eugene. Our industry doesn't believe that it is possible to build modular homes to the Oregon building standards and requirements, including the inspection requirements, on the same assembly line with manufactured homes. It's just too disruptive. Silvercrest Industries, who had a factory in Woodburn, a very successful manufactured home builder, needed to expand its business and was going to expand into modular homes built to Oregon standards. They built one and just didn't work out, and so that factory was closed. And I believe those homes are being built in California now. As I said, just the Oregon code really that applies to modular homes and factory really is the site-built code, and it contemplates the use of highly skilled workers and then the cover inspection process, the workers working basically on their own. In the manufactured home context, we look at more of a high-volume, low-priced products where each job is engineered, broken down into smaller parts with a lot of oversight by management to ensure high quality. And then, of course, the manufacturer, you know where to find him if there is a problem with quality. And at least with manufactured homes, the federal government can require that the homes be recalled almost as if like an automobile that has a problem. Turns out the state of Idaho building code for modular homes looked very much like Oregon's code, very unusable. And so in 2004, the Idaho legislature changed their law by adopting a measure that looks very much like Senate Bill 328, which exempted homes built in Idaho solely for export from Idaho requirements. The Idaho manufacturers have really jumped on this. They are now building modular homes for other states, for delivering to other states. I've given you in my written testimony a picture of some homes being built in Boise, Idaho by Gurdon Industries. They used to have a factory here in Oregon. Those are being delivered into San Jose. In order for the Idaho manufacturers to get that business, so they have to be very competitive. They have to compete with modular builders in other states as well as site builders. A problem from the Oregon manufacturer's point of view is the Idaho manufacturers are now substituting in Northern California modular homes for manufactured homes that we used to build. The modular home, even though if everything were identical, still has more consumer acceptance. It's easier to finance. Mr. Harmon will tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. We were surprised, actually, that modular homes built in Oregon solely for export, again, were required to even meet this requirement. The issue came up when Champion Homes was bidding on a contract to build homes for the United States Army to be delivered to Fort Lewis. They asked us to do any research to see if there are going to be any issues in this matter, and our research basically came back with kind of a cloudy answer. It was unclear, and no one signs a contract for millions of dollars with the federal government if there's uncertainty. So it turned out that problem solved itself because they were built for the United States Army. Federal law preempted, and so the issue went away. Now, we're surprised it was even an issue, though, because when you think about it, the purpose of the Oregon Code is to protect Oregonians, to protect our water supply, our electrical systems, etc. By definition, these homes will never be connected to the water, the sewer, the electrical systems in Oregon. In fact, the only Oregonians that will come in contact with these homes are the employees building them, producing them in the factories, and the transporters. And Oregon OSHA laws will continue to apply for those folks. Transportation laws, all other laws will continue to apply. This law also doesn't cost a single person a job. As I said before, no one builds modular homes in Oregon. In fact, we think the exact opposite is going to be true. This is going to create jobs. The legislature's really got a couple of choices as we see it. The legislature can allow these homes to be built to the state standards, the standards of the state where the home will be placed. If you do this, you'll allow modular homes meeting those standards to be built in Oregon. It also then allows the receiving state the opportunity to regulate what comes into a state, as it should be.
Okay. Mr. Meyer, mm-hmm. I appreciate that summary. I'm going to ask you, if you could stand down for a moment.
Sure.
And I'm going to ask Senator Ben Westland, who now has arrived, to come forward. Senator Westland.
Go ahead.
He's a busy guy, so we'd like to get him up here. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. Ditto.
That's it?
Yeah.
Bye.
Well, okay, say a few words. You know, as complicated as every bill is, and this one in its complexity, however, is actually pretty simple. What it does is allow Oregon manufacturers of mobile homes, pre-manufactured homes, and modular structures to compete in the prefab structure market with other states. In short, Oregon, again, is not competitive with other states, not because of our manufacturers' ability to produce effectively or our workers' ability to be efficient, but due to an inspection requirement that inhibits, indeed prohibits, an assembly line process for this type of specific product intended for use in other states. This product will not be used in our fair state. It will not receive a HUD or Oregon certification plate. And as an aside, I find it somewhat interesting that HUD certification plates are issued to structures actually, those structures that receive a HUD plate actually have lower specifications and quality requirements than those receiving, and those are used primarily as homes, receiving an Oregon State certification plate, which are modular classrooms or other prefab structures, construction huts. I find that ironic. But the point is that this bill allows at least two manufacturers that I'm aware of, Fuqua and Palm Harbor, that are national companies, to employ Oregonians, obviously, in Oregon. Employ people in a state that regrettably has the second highest unemployment rate in the nation. They don't have to manufacture these homes here. They prefer to. But they have manufacturing facilities in multiple states. What this bill tries to do is get employment here in Oregon in a fair, safe, and to make Oregon a competitive state in the national markets. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you squeezing me in. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Westland? Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll resume.
Thank you, Senator. Just a couple of things more. Oregon is the 10th largest producer of manufactured housing in the United States. 60% of everything that's built here is going to be exported to another state for consumption. So we have to export to survive. There just isn't enough business here to keep all the factories running. When I started in 79 with the association, there were 22 plants. A couple years ago, there were 11, and today there are 10, and there's still not enough manufactured home business to keep all those factories running. And so the industry needs to expand it, the things it can build. In 2003, we had a payroll of, just for production employees, about $67 million, employing about 1,900 people. In 98, we employed about 3,400 people and had a payroll in excess of $102 million. These are pretty good jobs. I've given you a graph. Actually, I gave you a chart showing the fall off of production and employment. And then I have another chart showing these are pretty good jobs. They're family wage jobs with benefits. I will close by saying that I think this is going to be one of the few bills that the legislature actually gets to vote for that creates jobs. It's going to allow Oregon manufacturers to compete in the interstate modular home market with companies located in other states. It'll employ Oregon families or Oregonians. It does not compromise the safety of any Oregonian or even Californians, for that matter. Now, there is need for some amendments. We've sat down and we've talked about this bill with Mr. Shiprack and Mr. Weeks. We'd like to see the bill amended so that it's restricted solely to residential modular structures. There are a couple of folks building commercial modular buildings in Oregon, so our statement that this wouldn't cost any Oregonian a job potentially might not be true if it applies beyond residential structures. The Building Codes Division would also like to see the language on page 2, lines 32 through 38 deleted. That language requires that Building Codes Division adopt rules regulating who can inspect these homes and the fees that can be charged.
Mr. Meyer, what were those lines again that you were...
What page?
Page 2 of the bill.
Yes.
Lines 32 through 38. I think you have the amendment before you, or your committee administrator has that. you know, I think rightfully, they don't want to be in the business of telling other states who can inspect homes going to those states. So it probably doesn't fit well, and it should be up to that other state to set the fees, et cetera. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miner. Any questions for Mr. Miner? Senator Atkinson.
Don, I'm really concerned about construction liability insurance and the expense that the state requires builders to have. Does your industry suffer from that same problem also, excessive insurance requirements that are jacked up but don't really cover anything?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, manufacturers, I think, by and large, are self-insured. Our retailers, though, have suffered that problem. They're also regulated as construction contractors, and so they've had some difficulty also. Same difficulty the home builders are having. It's a serious problem.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Meyer? Thank you. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Greg Harmon. I'm from Portland. I'm president of Commonwealth Real Estate Services, a manufactured home community management company. My family's been in the business in Oregon since 1964. I'm former president of the Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. My statement will be very brief. I wanted to touch quickly on modular home construction and financing. Modular homes in the United States now are known as part of a group of housing called system-built housing. If you go on Google or Yahoo and you Google in system-built housing, you'll come up with a category of housing that includes concrete homes, log homes, modular homes, panelized homes, and manufactured homes. The systems-built housing business now across the country is estimated that it is responsible for almost 50% of all new homes that are being built in the United States. System building has proved to save costs to the builder and the buyer in the form of reduced construction time, minimum exposure to inclement weather, and increased energy efficiencies. Precursors to today's log or modular or manufactured homes, panelized homes, have existed for centuries. An example of that is that the systems built, quote-unquote, housing business gained popularity in 1908 when Sears Roebuck and Company offered a prefabricated home in their catalog. So that's how far back this idea goes. In 2002, homes built entirely with building systems technology represent 8% of all single-family homes completed nationally, 13% of all new single-family homes built outside metropolitan areas, and 13% of all single-family contractor homes built on an owner's land. Modular home production in the United States was up 12% in 2004 alone, and it's up 45% since 1994. Modular housing is the wave of the future, and today Oregon only participates in a tiny portion of this business. Previously, HUD-coded manufactured homes have been the lifeblood of our industry, but today, while a manufactured home and a modular home are hardly distinguishable between the two side by side, the modular home is much easier to finance. The nation's largest mortgage lender, Countrywide Home Loans, has an entire division dedicated to system-built housing and financing modular homes, but they won't even finance a HUD-coded manufactured home any longer. Modular housing production is where the market is, and we want to be a part of that market. Please support our bill, Senate Bill 328.
Thank you very much.
Any questions for you?
We'll go ahead and have the next testimony, and then we'll ask questions.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Leadham. I'm a resident of Silverton, Oregon, and currently the plant general manager at Champion Homes of Oregon in Silverton. And on a side note, we employ about 200 individuals there at the plant. We're a division of Champion Enterprises, one of the nation's largest builders of residential housing, single-family housing, and one of the largest builders of modular housing in the nation. Over the last 5 years, Champion Enterprises has had to close down three manufacturing facilities in the Northwest. One of those was in Woodburn, Oregon. That closure cost the state of Oregon and the city of Woodburn several hundred jobs that would have been stopped had they been able to build modular housing. And I think it's important to note that these jobs were not minimum wage jobs. We currently at the plant in Silverton pay in a range, and this is our construction workers, our factory line workers. We're paying in a range of $11.50 to $16 an hour, and they have a full benefit package which includes medical, dental, short-term disability, and life insurance. And they also participate in a company-sponsored 401k program. Not exactly flipping burgers at Burger King. We've had a pattern in the last few years of running at a very low production rate, less than half our capacity through the winter months. You can imagine that that creates a tremendous amount of instability in the plant and a lot of turnover as far as our employees are concerned. Last year, we were approached by a developer at Fort Lewis, Washington, and asked if we would be interested in participating in a process up at Fort Lewis to build military housing. In February 1996, then-President Bill Clinton signed into law a defense authorization bill known as the Military Housing Privatization Act. And what it provided for is an alternative means for the military to go out and substantially upgrade their housing. Under that program, the Army and their program is called the Residential Communities Initiative, established a long-term business relationship with private developers for the purpose of improving military family housing for military families. The picture, I think, that's right here. The picture I'm about to show you is of a project house that we built last summer for the military at Fort Lewis, and it's it was to showcase what we could do with modular housing. We since then have got the contract to build this housing, and over the next 3 years, we'll be producing close to $100 million worth of this housing for the fort. A large portion of this income, obviously, will come back to the state of Oregon. You might ask yourself, why modular housing and why not site-built housing? The project was started as site-built housing. It was on a 10-year build-out, and in its first year, it was projected over the 10 years to be $70 million over budget. Using modular housing, we'll be able to complete the project in a fraction of the time, and because of the cost savings, approximately 10 to 15% per building, we'll be able to erase the debt and actually put the project back in the black. What will modular housing do for us as a plant? Last year we ran at less than half our capacity. We experienced a large amount of time of downtime because of lack of orders. We had massive layoffs of our people, which we had to bring back in later on in the year. What this will do for us, it will actually increase our payroll by at least 80 production workers. It will put us over 300 total employees for the facility, and it will virtually guarantee us maximum capacity production at year-round employment. Before we started this process, because of the large sums of money and bonding involved with this contract, we did a lot of research on the Oregon law. The way the law is written and enforced, we would not have been able to do the project. We would have the inspection process and the requirements of journeyman labor was so burdensome that it would not have been feasible to do. It's important to note that these jobs would not have been lost to our industry. They just would have gone to either Idaho or California to produce. It would have been a hell of a lost opportunity for us. Just in closing, I'd like to reiterate that Champion Enterprises, the parent company of Champion Homes of Oregon, successfully builds these homes all across the nation. It's become one of the largest increasing segments of our business, and it continues to have no end in sight. I can tell you that we're getting a tremendous amount of requests from private individuals and developers in other states to build these homes, and it could be a huge portion and a huge boost to our industry. In closing, the current rules governing building and modular housing does not help my plant, does not help my industry, nor does it help employment in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question, first of all. By inference of what you said in terms of that you would be able to increase, I think the number was 80 production workers. Yes. So the assumption that I'm hearing through those words were, but for the compliance issues and the cost of those compliance issues that under our current Oregon law that preclude you from doing that. But if this piece of legislation were to pass, are you telling the committee that you are then committed to come and build a plant in Oregon? That's what it sounds like when you say 80 production workers, or use your existing plant. But in any case, you would start producing those modular homes in Oregon?
The fact that the homes are being produced for Fort Lewis, it comes under federal preemption.
Right.
So that whether the state changes the law or not, we'll go forward and build the houses.
Not going forward. If this bill passes, I mean, the implication is that you're going to expand your business opportunity in Oregon with this type of product.
Absolutely.
Okay. Questions for the committee? Yes. Senator Montes Anderson.
Let's get to this one statement in the bill. Allows electrical and plumbing installation and prefabricated structures, and this is in the summary, intended for delivery in another state to be firmed by persons not licensed as electrician or certified as plumber. What? Tell me the difference between someone that would be doing the electrical and plumbing in these prefabricated structures versus those that are licensed.
Mr. Chair, Melissa Anderson, Don Miner, for your record. The intention is to use the same people who build manufactured homes to build these homes. California does not require, the California Building Code does not require the use of plumbers or electricians to do that work in a modular home factory. So if we were to build homes for California, that phases in nicely with the manufactured home facility. You could probably intermix the two products together and use the same personnel. If we were to do it, if we were to try and do that with modular homes for Oregon, essentially we'd have to send home our production people who build the manufactured homes and substitute them with other folks. So our goal is to use the exact same people and manage that to the requirements of the state where the home will be shipped. Not all states require the use of journeymen electricians and plumbers to do that work in a factory setting.
We do. If that residence or that mobile home will be in the state of Oregon, what this law is going to do is those that are going outside of the state. I mean, to me, I'm having a dilemma as to, you know, we have our licensed electricians and plumbers, and usually those who aren't licensed aren't, you know, don't have the same expertise and qualifications. And I guess I just need a little bit more explanation regarding the difference.
Mr. Chair, Senator Montes Anderson, I think it's on page 1 of the bill, line 15. This bill would not allow a manufactured home that wasn't built to the Oregon standards to either be rented, leased, or sold in the state of Oregon. So the bill only applies outside of this state. In terms of the qualification, I don't think there's any dispute. A journeyman electrician is a far more highly skilled worker than the workers who work on production lines in our factories. I don't think there's a dispute about that. It's easier to become a lawyer than an electrician or a plumber in this state. But we build, if you look at that graph I gave you, we build thousands and actually tens of thousands of manufactured homes in this state with non-journeyman personnel doing those tasks. And we don't have any problems with the homes. It's because the work is broken down into small segments.
And just to follow up, I think that's the main point. I wanted to know if the quality of the home, and maybe you don't have this kind of information, but you don't run into problems with plumbing and electrical issues because you're not using electricians, licensed electricians and plumbers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Montes Anderson, that's correct. We do not run into those problems. If we did, we'd be out of business. There's no doubt as to where to find a manufacturer if there's something wrong with the home. Both federal government and as well as the state of Oregon have regulatory oversight in this area. If we were to build modular homes on those same assembly lines, the receiving state is going to set the standard of who does the work, set the standard of the work that will be done, and oversee the inspection process. And then, of course, the consumer protection laws of that state will continue to apply. So we don't see this really as a public safety issue at all.
Thank you.
I have a few questions actually were submitted by other members for the committee, so I was just going to ask you then, Mr. Miner. What control is there on re-importation of homes that are built to lower standards or other state standards that these homes will not end up back in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, in order for a manufactured home or a modular home either to come into this state, there has to be evidence that it meets the building code. On the manufactured home, it's a red tag at the back of the home that matches up to a serial number of the home. In the case of a modular home, and Oregon doesn't have a great deal of experience on modular homes, but the way that will work is there will be a tag on the back of the home saying that it meets that state standards. Now, we'd be very foolish to sell a modular home to an Oregonian that didn't meet the Oregon Building Code. It would be picked up in the land use approval process, the installation, building inspection processes, et cetera. So that's really the checks and balance. And proof of the workings of that system is that it doesn't happen today. At least no one knows if it's happening today. But that will be the check and the balance, is they can't come into this state if it doesn't meet our standards.
Okay, I have another question. And this probably, you gentlemen would probably be the ones to answer this one. I know it's always hard to give estimates, but look, you talk about this as a growing segment of the manufactured housing, residential housing market. Can you give me any idea in terms of the work that your factories or factories of other, and we have some other people be talking, so not just your company, maybe in general, but in terms of the market as a whole, what percentage of the market of Oregon could start manufacturing modular homes as opposed to right now when they're just doing manufactured homes? Just trying to get an idea of the size of the potential of this business compared to, our the status quo in terms of manufactured housing.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I can give you any kind of exact figures, but I know that all manufacturers in the state of Oregon are in a position to start building these homes and are anxious to do so. That doesn't mean that all will, but I believe that most of them will. In terms of, we've not had the experience in the state of Oregon to kind of understand just how big this is going to be. But I can tell you that for Champion, we've had plants that have converted over to modular housing in the last 5 years and have gone from being 100% HUD-coated homes to 100% modular-coated homes. So we see that the potential is unlimited.
Any other questions for this panel? Senator Starr.
The situation is, though, that as an Oregonian, I can't buy a modular home and put it in Oregon, put it up on my lot in Oregon today. I have to buy a manufactured home.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I mean, there's nothing that prohibits you purchasing one. It's just no one builds them in the state for this state. There might be somebody in another state that would build them to the Oregon requirements. Our experience with attempting to build them to the Oregon standard has not been successful. It's just too disruptive. My guess is you could probably build a site-built home as inexpensively.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to ask Jared Broadfoot and Burton Weiss to come forward now. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Burton Weist. I'm here on behalf of Local 290 Plumbers and Steam Fitters. And with me is Jared Broadfoot with the Building Trades Council and IBEW. We're here not in opposition to the bill. We are in support of things that will employ Oregonians and keep Oregonians employed. Our concern is the obvious one, that we don't want one set of jobs to come at the expense of another person's job, so that we result in legislation that simply trades jobs between two industries that are both hurting. At Local 290, we have nearly 800 plumbers who are looking for work. So we are not in the business of coming and supporting bills that would take jobs away from existing plumbers when we have that many people unemployed in this state. We have met with the sponsors of the bill, and we're satisfied in general that this is an opportunity to employ more Oregonians or keep people who are in the manufactured housing business employed. Our concerns were that, again, that we don't take jobs away, and that's why we worked out the amendment which applies this to residential housing and not to commercial. The second issue that we would like to ask the committee to consider as an amendment that wasn't discussed is that we think that this issue should be revisited by the legislature at some point in the future to ensure that what has been said actually happens. I make no disparaging remarks about the manufactured housing industry at all, but I think those of you who have been in the legislature very long have experienced all kinds of ideas that are going to create jobs and that are going to add jobs and have different impacts. So for that reason, we're suggesting that there be an amendment to this legislation that would be a sunset clause, to where folks would have to come back and reexamine this so that we could see how many jobs were created, did it really happen, we could see who those jobs, where those jobs came from, were they at the expense of plumbers and electricians, were they not at the expense of plumbers and electricians, was the product, what is the consumer reaction to the product, and a variety of issues, so we get another opportunity to come back and discuss it. We haven't agreed on a date. We suggested 4 years. I think other folks have got different times, but since there isn't a work session scheduled today, if the committee has any interest in that kind of an amendment, we would be glad to work with the folks from the manufactured housing industry and try to come up with something that we can agree on to do that. So again, in conclusion, we're not interested in stopping jobs. A job for an Oregonian is a job, and we want to help that. But at the same time, we think there needs to be a review to make sure we're not just swapping jobs in a tough market right now and actually hurting other people and putting other people who currently have a job out of work.
For the record, Jared Broadfoot with the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and National Electrical Contractors Association. I'll stop there. I agree with what Burton has said, but one of the concerns that we had, and is the concerns of IBW and electrical contractors and plumbing contractors, is that we have a reason for licensing in this state, and that's their fire and life safety issues, to make sure that we protect the folks that have to live in the places that we do work on. But since this is for dealing with out-of-state stuff that's being shipped out of state, we're willing to, like Burton said, look at this, come back and review it to make sure that we're not displacing jobs or anything like that. So if this is all stuff that's going to be shipped out of this state, and if the committee and the legislature is comfortable with doing that, sending stuff that's not done by licensed folks to those other states that don't have our same requirements, then we're okay with that. But I do agree that we'd like to see an amendment that dealt with a sunset and a review in one of the future legislative sessions.
Let me just ask a question on that, because I understand that thought, and I'm just now processing, that request. One thing, but I also want to think about it from a manufacturing standpoint. If I'm asking a business, by the way, you know how long these things take. It takes a while to get implemented and all that, but if we look at that, and I think that's a good point, Mr. Weiss, to look at, is that you got to make sure that when we deal with a sunset, it's always a lot easier to kill things and to vote affirmatively for things. We couldn't, I don't believe, look at a sunset provision that inhibited people from making the investments.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think you're going to make an investment, but I have to get an affirmative vote to continue the investment, it's going to be, I'm probably not going to make the investment. So it would be kind of a worthless bill. So, I think that's just an important part of that. However, on the flip side of that, I do think your point is very valid. We've talked about this on a number of issues in a number of committees in terms of a review. Now, whether that necessarily has to be a sunset or a report of jobs and again could have the same impact, which is telling the legislature that there's something wrong in POTA bill or not. I mean, that's another approach, but I think we'll weigh that. Questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
I think you made, I just reiterate your point. I think that it's a very good one. You don't want to be in a situation that you preempt or you don't allow the manufacturers to make the investments mm-hmm. they need to make because there's no certainty in the market. So I think that's a very valid point.
I'll reiterate the Vice Chair's point that is reiterating your
All right. We got unanimity on that.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks, you guys. Okay, our final one is Brian Grawl, is what it looks like, and Forrest Barnes. You sign up in support, so new information would be helpful. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. I'd like to say thank you for this opportunity to talk about Bill 328. I've asked Don Miner to give you a little propaganda, give you an idea. It's a small disc.
It isn't little. It's 24 by 16 or something.
Real small. Anyhow, my name is Brian Grawl. I'm the general manager of Fuqua Homes in Bend, Oregon. We employ about 200 people right now, both skilled and unskilled, in various crafts. By far, most of them are craftspeople that are constructing the homes. We have a bunch of support people as well, engineers, sales, accounting, so on and so forth. We've been in Bend since 1968. We've used basically the HUD code since the early 80s, 1981, as a strategy to basically expand on top of our HUD business, more than just the traditional street retailer that most people are probably familiar with. We've been working with developers since 1981. We almost have 25 years of experience working with your everyday land home site developer, big developments, a couple hundred homes, as well as down to 30 and whatnot, everything in between. We looked at that strategy to add to our capacity, and it did. It added our capacity. In the mid-70s, we were probably a couple sections a day. Today, we're at five sections a day. It worked. At this point, we've invested, our ownership has invested a considerable amount of money, starting in the 90s, really, to add to our capacity. It was a 60,000-square-foot building. Today, it's 122,000-square-foot building. We have double capacity, basically. We can go beyond five and probably nine or ten, and we'd like the chance to test that. In doing that, we see modular as a strategy and opportunity to basically add to that capacity, add jobs. To give you a little idea of what's happened most recently, I'll take from 2004 calendar year. We had one development that we had the developer very interested in who we are, what we do. We couldn't get them beyond the HUD idea in terms of building a HUD code home. And he required building an IRC-coded home, a modular home. That developer's in California. That's 150 homes, and that's probably in the neighborhood of 400 sections or so with his particular configuration. There's a builder in Idaho that is building that product for that particular developer at this point. Altogether, in 2004, there was a four-week stretch where I called Don and said, Don, I've lost 400 homes this week. And he said, how'd you do that? And I said, well, I didn't get them. It had to do with basically IRC again, modular code. For the whole year, I probably lost opportunities closer to 1,000 homes, all said and told, or at least having the foot in the door. Using the lower number there, just, say if we got 400, that translates for us into somewhere between 100, 130 jobs, depending on what kind of homes we're looking at. It's almost $4 million in payroll revenue. That's close to $20 million in terms of gross revenue. Huge opportunities in terms of what we have together. And I can do some comparisons for you. From other experiences, we have a sister facility in Missouri, almost identical physically. First time I went there a couple years ago, I thought I was stepping off the plane and into our own building center in Bend, Oregon, but it was really indistinguishable. They build primarily modular code, and they have a process that's very amenable to making that work. Meanwhile, there's a builder in Southern California that's primarily a HUD code builder, federal code builder, but they build up to four other codes, international, the IRC code, park models, so on and so forth. Their name is Silvercrest. They've done a wonderful job. They're a $60 million employer. And they do a fantastic job, and they show that you can use multiple codes to basically go build volume, keep jobs going without having to build multiple facilities and redundant costs and overheads. And I think Don mentioned this earlier, maybe Steve Leadham did, Mr. Leadham. You know, we've had a company here that did try, Silvercrest, formerly of Woodburn, Oregon, and now they've transferred those jobs to their Northern California facility, and they don't see a viable market here anymore. What we're talking about is let's keep jobs, let's build jobs, and let's make Oregon a better place overall. So,
thank you, Mr. Rowe. Thank you. Mr. Barnes.
Chairman Metzger, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Forrest Barnes. I'm the division president of Palm Harbor Homes. I live in Albany, Oregon. We're always looking for ways to grow our business, and we believe the California market may be the largest market for housing in the United States. Currently, however, when we receive an inquiry from a developer or a builder from California who is in this fast-growing modular market, we refer them to our Arizona factory. It's good for Arizona, but not for Oregon. Our industry exports about 60% of the homes that we build to other states, creating jobs for Oregonians in rural counties like Linn County, where unemployment is high. We would like to help lower that unemployment rate and believe Senate Bill 328 can do that. The home you have in front of you on the photocopy is a two-story Cape Cod that is built in all the states where our factories are located except for Oregon. Our Arizona operations build them for California, and I would like to build them in Oregon for export to California. Within Palm Harbor Homes, our factories integrate both HUD and modular products in North Carolina, Florida, Texas, Ohio, Alabama, and Arizona, but not in Oregon. Our president and CEO are constantly asking me when we will begin building modular products in Oregon. They want to know what I'm doing about it, and they don't understand why it is so difficult and why the rules are made this way. It's particularly hard when the other states I have mentioned do not make the task of building modular homes so difficult. As an industry and as a company, we see our jobs filling the need to boost manufacturing employment. When you hear manufacturing jobs, we hear so much about the loss of manufacturing jobs. We want to create more of them, and we think the state would encourage us to do so. From the handout that Don gave you, you'll find that we work 40-hour weeks, we provide paid holidays, vacations, health benefits, and retirement plans. The jobs are family wage positions that are filled by both men and women throughout this state. In Linn County, I believe the average wage is around $28,000 per year. Our average wage exceeds $34,000 per year. Working for Palm Harbor Homes is a great job in Linn County. At our peak, we employed about 360 people. Today, we employ 257. I would like to get those 100 jobs back, as we have both the plant, which is a $12 million investment that we made in 1995, and the land necessary to expand our employment base. I urge you to support Senate Bill 328 as an avenue that can help us accomplish this goal. Allowing our industry to build homes to the receiving state's code and inspection process will not cost Oregon a single job. It will create jobs by bringing us new business opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes. Mr. Grohl, Mr. Barnes, if this bill were to pass, can you give me an idea from your two respective companies about when you think you might start building modular homes in Oregon? Can you give me an idea of time frame? If all of a sudden you got good news for your boss and you said, get off my case, I actually can start doing this now, when would that actually, you think, be geared up to actually start production?
I'll go ahead and... it would take us a little bit of time. We would first have to get the approval from the receiving state, which our target would be California. We would then have to complete our quality control manuals, get plan approvals and those things. So I think it could take anywhere from 6 months to a year to get the business going. The other opportunity we have, Chairman Metzger, is that we haven't gone out and solicited any of that business because there's no certainty that I could build it.
Sure.
So it could take a year or 2 years to get a project together, and then your opportunity could be a little bit downstream from there. So as you discussed before, that certainty is very important when you're doing this because projects just don't come out of the ground. You have to essentially farm them up to make them workable.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Without much elaboration on top of that, I'd say it's very similar. Our experience with developers, just spending where they're at, even with a HUD-based project, to break ground on dirt can vary as much as a couple years. You know, it'd be nice if it was a couple months. So it could, to really fill up the pipeline, you're probably looking 3 years out, mm-hmm. where you have regular steady business and where you see the momentum starting to plane a little.
Questions for either? These gentlemen. Yes.
Just a quick question. How much would a house like this, I know, cost?
That home is probably going to be around $160,000.
In Multnomah County or Clackamas County?
Oh, well, I couldn't tell you in Oregon.
I know.
In our Arizona plant, that's about $160,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, I think what we're going to do is, I think the committee is very interested in this process, and certainly as an economic development committee as well as a business committee, we're interested in growing jobs. And you know, I think the concerns that some of our friends in the trades are legitimate concerns, and I appreciate how they have been addressed somewhat in the amendment, and then maybe the further discussion in terms of how we might evaluate the program. But one thing I would say is that while we always have concern about trading jobs, I mean, I think it's something we always want to look at. Since we have manufacturers that are involved in, basically, when they make residential housing, they're involved in both types of products. And I would be more concerned about losing the manufactured housing people we have now because they're doing multiple products and would move to other states and take the whole business with them rather than have multiple lines of product that they can make in this state. Because then that would be a net loss of jobs to us. If, in fact, they couldn't do manufactured housing or modular housing and had to have separate plants and the efficiencies of being able to do that together, certainly to me, you know, makes a lot of sense. And certainly with our trades and our codes, those are designed to protect our citizens for products and what they're using here. And for those that are for export, obviously they need to have that protection too, and those states are set up to that and they have to be addressed. So to me, I think this is a good product. I'm particularly impressed with the testimony that we've had today that the individuals that have come to talk representing these manufacturers, this isn't like a pie in the sky, and sometimes we have those, like maybe we might do something. Sounds very, very clear that the market is growing and we want and will be doing that in this state. And I think that's a real positive thing for us. I would ask Ms. Van Winkle to talk to our friends in the trades and continue with Mr. Miner and his group in terms of how we might have a reporting mechanism so as a legislature we can understand if there were any changes than what we might have anticipated upon movement of this bill and what form that might take that's effective and actually works and so it does not discourage the investment we might make with this bill. And then we will bring the bill back because I think it is an important jobs bill and I'm committed to moving it forward. If there's any other comments from the committee at this time, if not, we're adjourned.